the potential Irish Language Act. That's one of the biggest stalemates at Stormont. Sinn Féin want an Irish Language Act to promote and protect the language. The DUP says no. The Orange Order has weighed into the debate in a public consultation over proposed legislation. A submission from Fermanagh Grand Orange Lodge claims there's a stronger case to give the Polish language official status here. It also says using Irish language in public bodies would cost too much. I'm joined by Dr. David Hume, commentator and former director of services at the Orange Order, and Chris Donnelly, who's a Republican blogger. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
So, Chris, if we can start with you, I mean, for Irish speakers, what day-to-day difference would an Irish Language Act actually make? Spell it out for us.
Well, I think, first of all, good morning, Joel and David. I think the first instance the Irish Language Act would fulfill an obligation was undertaken by the British government a decade ago at St Andrews to deliver one. I mean, those in favour of the legislation argue it's required to meet international obligations for minority languages. You know, language experts suggest international best practice shows language legislation. It's an effective way of developing and protecting indigenous languages. And essentially, Joel, what it's about is, you know, what is being sought centres around a desire of people passionate about their language to be able to live a significant part of their life through the Irish language, and putting an obligation on public bodies to facilitate this. And by the way, this is not unique. I mean, the issue, one of the aspects of the Irish Language Act campaign would involve conferring official status on the Irish language. That's one way of reflecting the reality that Irish was the indigenous language of this land. Its fate is intertwined with our troubled history, and it has shaped our landscape. After all, the Welsh Language Measure 2011 conferred official status upon Wales. And that's why I think you highlighted something there, Joel, that, you know, when this issue, which is part of the consultation, the Orange Order's response to that, they were very dismissive. In fact, they said that Polish, you know, quoting, Polish should be given a higher preference for such consideration.
Well, the actual wording in the response says the Irish language is a minority language and should not be given official status any more than Ulster Scots, Polish, Lithuanian or any other language. In fact, languages like Polish, for example, are much more prevalent throughout the population in Northern Ireland currently and should in fact be given a higher preference for such consideration.
Yes, and I think if the Orange Order were to take that argument to Scotland and Wales, and the Orange Order obviously see themselves as a British body, you know, United Kingdom would be where they would see their country, they would be laughed out of Scotland and Wales if they said that there should be no official status deemed upon the Welsh language in Wales, or there shouldn't be laws to protect Scottish Gaelic. So I think it was a calculated insult, and it's not just in terms of the official status. In one other area, on the issue of establishing Gaeltacht, you know, the Orange Order response says, there are no Gaeltacht areas in Northern Ireland to our knowledge. It goes on to say, we believe that any attempt to establish such areas will simply lead to further disrespect and suspicion around the whole idea. Now, you know, the Gaeltacht areas throughout Ireland are found primarily in counties Donegal, Mayo, Galway and Kerry. You know, the very idea that Gaeltacht regions would prove unwelcoming, leading to disrespect and suspicion, you know, turns reality on its head. Those four counties are amongst the most popular destinations, not just for foreign tourists, but domestic tourists throughout Ireland, whether they're nationalists or unionists in the north or anywhere else. And the other thing, there was an element of ignorance in it, because, of course, in West Belfast, there's a Gaeltacht quarter. I know it because I attended a talk given by a prominent Orangeman, Reverend Brian Kennaway, there a number of years ago, when he actually brought an orange banner to On Culture Land to talk about the Orange Order, its traditions, to the audience, who included very many Irish language enthusiasts. So I think that, you know, just on some of the content of the Orange Order submission was very disappointing. And, you know, what was actually the most noteworthy was a recurring theme throughout the submission that money is just too tight in this economic climate to be wasted in such a manner. And there were a number of occasions, you know, if you listen, one where it's about to, on the issue of allowing Irish to be used in the Assembly, the Orange Order submission says, the cost of administering such a scheme in times of austerity is not acceptable. On an Irish language commissioner post being created, it says, there is absolutely no need for such a person to put even further pressure on the public purse. And on Irish in courts, it says, the financial burden imposed on the system because of this would be untenable. Now, that theme is clear from the Orange Order. In austere times, imposing untenable financial burdens upon the public purse is simply not acceptable. Now, Joel, I hardly need to point out that is a remarkable position for the Orange Order to take. I mean, only 2 months ago, in the Belfast Telegraph in late November, they revealed that the policing bill for the Orange Order-sponsored Tordell Loyalist Camp has now exceeded £18.5 million. And that's only one area where the Orange Order's conduct has proved extremely costly to the public purse, in terms of policing and public order.
Let David Hume respond to that. Dr. David Hume.
Well, good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
Some of the issues really certainly are around the cost factors. That comes across in some of the submissions. And there's a number of other Orange Lodges made submissions to, and the Grand Lodge in relation to it. So there is the cost issue. In terms of Tordell Avenue, nobody really wants the situation in Tordell Avenue to continue. It is too costly. It's very intractable. But there are big divisions there, and it's the price we as a community are paying for community division at Tordell Avenue. So that's not something that the Orange Order wants to continue. It would like to see it resolved. And there are issues in terms of our community in relation to how we get it resolved. The issue of the Irish Language Act, I think, is somewhat different than that, in that we're proposing something that we know is going to cost. Now, we do, and Chris is right, that there's a place for the Irish language. There are a lot of very, very genuine people involved in the Irish language movement. So we have to find a way forward in terms of how we recognise that. But this appears from, certainly from the people who are opposing it, in terms of what they're saying, it is a cost factor, is one of the things.
So then by default, are they actually saying that if the money was there, then they'd be happy enough?
Well, I'm not sure what the logic of their own particular arguments would be, but certainly cost is one of the issues. It's not the only issue, though, and the other issue is significant too, because the issue of Irish language is seen as being a divisive issue in the community. It's seen as being politicised. Now, that's not to say that everybody, of course, that's involved in the Irish language is involved for those reasons, but there certainly is a perception, Joel, and that's a big perception that needs to be addressed within the community. And it's not just the Orange submissions that are saying that. I mean, the Presbyterian Church submission was saying similar things, in relation to it. So I think there's a lot more groundwork to be done in terms of people who genuinely want to preserve and are very committed to preserving the Irish language in relation to how they sell that to the wider community. And County Fermanagh Grand Lodge was quite right in pointing out, the minority language situation. I mean, Irish, I think, from the 2011 census, was the fourth language in terms of people who had that as their main language, and it came after Polish and Lithuanian, so that sort of puts it in the context.
So would you agree with the Fermanagh Orange mem that when they say in their submission that perhaps Polish actually should be given a higher preference for such consideration than Irish?
Well, I think we need to think very carefully about all of these things. You have a number of minority languages now in Northern Ireland, and it's how you try and deal with those. The Irish language is very significant because it's an ancient language, it's a very old language, and it should have a proper place, in terms of how we all view it. But it's this prescriptiveness of legislation that I think causes concern to people.
What do you make of that, Chris?
Well, I think in the first point of issue, take with what David has said, is when he's attempted to distance the Orange Order from the responsibility for the Tordell Loyalist Camp. I mean, at the start, I said that the British government are in default of the St Andrews Agreement when they said they would introduce an Irish Language Act. Yet, in spite of that fact, we haven't seen Irish language activists setting up camps at sectarian interfaces and parading to them and erecting flags in a way that would cost the public £18.5 million. So that's something which needs to be taken note of, that the Irish language community has been very responsible. I think we now see across this community people of all sorts of backgrounds, all sorts of religious and political persuasions, learning Irish, having an enthusiasm for that, regardless, removing it from any political sphere. And what I hear from David, unfortunately, is, and I think that this is something that there's an argument that is now brewing within unionism, which is a good thing. We see it within the constituency of Fermanagh alone, for instance. The local Ulster Unionist MP, who was the Unity Unionist candidate in the election just a week before Christmas, condemned the announcement that a small Irish language primary school would be relocated to the grounds of a derelict post-primary school in Lisnaskey. And I think that was a dreadful move by Tom. And it contradicted what his own party leader, Mike Nesbitt, had said when he was much more positive about Irish at his party conference speech only weeks earlier. And after that, he was actually invited by Forward First, which is an Irish language group, to meet with Irish language enthusiasts. So I think there is an argument that, that is being had now within the union community. And I think that progressive voices, you know, are becoming stronger, and I think that's a good thing.
But you can't escape the fact that not just, I mean, you leave the Orange Order aside from this, that there are many people, many unionists who will look upon this and see it as a waste of money and a time when that money could be better spent whenever there are so many pressures.
Well, I think you're making a valid point. I mean, I think the actual detail of what is doable for an Irish Language Act, you know, what could be prioritised, what is, could be introduced in initial phase, I think all that could be reasonably worked out between language advocates and the political class, straddling the political divide, were the will within political unionism there. But let's be clear, Joe, if we're talking about it in times of austerity, where money should be prioritised, it certainly shouldn't be spent having to police a political camp at a sectarian interface in North Belfast.
No, I mean, you're making the point that the Orange Order are coming from a position of weakness when they're talking about finance because of that. But what I'm saying is that there are others who are not connected to the Orange Order who would also look at this and say, actually, is this really the best way to spend some of this money?
Well, that's why I'm making the point that I think that what can be doable, what can be pragmatic, could be introduced, could be worked out between language enthusiasts and the political class. And I think that that is something that could be taken on board. But I think what we see and what certainly comes through this submission from the County Fermanagh Grand Lords Lodge is an opposition, regardless of whether money was an issue. It's just an opposition on based, unfortunately, if you look at the statements in terms of the official status of the language and the Gael fact, it's based on ignorance and prejudice.
That could be levelled, David, that, you know, whether the money was there or not, the Orange Order and many unions would still be saying no.
Well, that's where I think that there is a need, you know, there's an educational need effectively in relation to it, because there are perceptions about the Irish language, and a lot of people in the unionist community would see it as very politicised. So those perceptions really...
What kind of perceptions? Like what?
Well, I think they see it as very political, and they would see the fact that you know, Sinn Féin's support for it is seen as a very political support in terms of using it as a weapon. And those perceptions, I know there are lots of people involved in the Irish language and who have preserved the Irish language who are not political in that sense, but the perceptions are there, and we have to deal with the perceptions. And I think that there's a lot of groundwork to be done in terms of those perceptions. I think that this legislation proposal is too early. I think that there's a lot of that work needs to be done, and I think there are people who'll be open-minded and who'll, you know, respect the language as they expect, you know, respect for Ulster Scots or other aspects of culture within the unionist community.
So you honestly believe that over time and with change, a day could come when an Orange Order submission may actually support an Irish Language Act?
Well, I don't know about an Orange Order. I certainly know in terms of, you know, in our own community,
I'm sure there are Irish speakers within the Orange Order.
There are a few Irish speakers within the Orange Order, yes, there would be, and certainly in the Republic of Ireland, the border counties. I mean, I know that in our own area, in our Ulster Scots community, this year for the first time we had a tourist group from East Belfast down to talk about Irish language and place names, and that positioned it in a very populist way, in that a lot of townland names and a lot of local place names have Irish roots.
What would need to happen to change the perception that you're talking about, that this is some sort of political weapon?
Well, I think that people have to be aware that there is a fear and a concern that this is a Irish language is a sort of a, I suppose, a Trojan horse, to use that term, in terms of society, and that it will cost more. You'll have almost an industry of translators required for, you know, assembly business, for court business, all of that. And I think it needs to be put in a British context. And Chris is quite right in referring to Wales and to Scotland, because there are language acts there. And I think there's a lot of work required to see how they have worked out. Has there been divisiveness in the past when those acts came in, and how was it dealt with, and so on. So I think there's some work to be done in relation to that.
Chris, finally, I mean, chance to respond to that. The real issue here is that the perception is that this is some sort of political weapon that the Sinn Féin are using, and you know, David Hume even using that Trojan horse phrase again.
Yes, it's utter nonsense. I mean, this notion that we need to pander to perceptions that are based on prejudice and ignorance, That's the job of political leaders. That's the job of cultural leaders. That's the job of community leaders, to educate people. You know, Republicans have had to educate, leaders have had to educate their own community to say, you know, we need to allow for you to find a place that we can allow for unionists to respect their British war dead. In fact, we even see nationalist Republican leaders laying wreaths because they realise there is a need to do things like that in this society. The idea that we just say, no, there are prejudices out there, there are perceptions out there, and therefore we can't move on, I think that's wrong. And I think why I alluded earlier to the fact that there now seems to be a difference within Ulster Unionism, at least as a party. Mike Nesbitt seems to realise this, that there's a job of leadership on his behalf to preach to people that you shouldn't pander to the curry my yogurt mentality. We need to, even within more progressive elements of the union, to realise in the longer term they have to find a place for the Irish language within the unionist narrative of the future. Just like for Republicans, there has to be a place for accepting the British and unionist tradition within our narrative of the future as well.
Okay, Chris Donnelly and Dr. David Hume will have to leave it there. Thanks to you both.